Hello, everybody. Peter Laws at the Flicks the Church Forgot, telling you that this is the audio version of the video that is available on YouTube. As ever, you can check that out, but if you'd rather the audio, it's about to hit you now. Hi everybody, welcome back to the third, and this is the final episode in this special series looking at three recent Haunted House movies. Tonight we've got a film that's about to make its DVD debut here in the UK on the 1st of February 2016, and it's called The House on Pine Street.
Have you felt anything off since moving here? In the house, I mean.
Are you feeling?
She's just tired. You think the house is haunted?
How come I haven't seen anything? I live here too, you know. I haven't seen a thing. I'm fairly certain there is something going on in your house. I felt it tonight at the party. And I feel it now, here in this room with us.
Jenny, are you feeling okay?
Yes.
Now, judging from these last three episodes, you might be forgiven for thinking that pretty much every house in the world is haunted by something, and the house on Pine Street has certainly got its fair share of spooks. Here, Emily Goss plays a girl called Jennifer Branigan, who's just had a nervous breakdown, and reluctantly she's got to return to her hometown. The key issue is that she's 7 months pregnant, and so with a history of mental health, both her husband and her mother are on the highest alert to make sure that she doesn't hit another downturn and potentially affect the baby. Now, when Jennifer and her husband Luke move into a beautiful old Kansas rental house to be near to her mom, Jennifer tries to make the best of it, but she misses the city, she misses her old life and her best friend, but what's more, there's something happening to her new home. There are thuds on the ceiling and banging on the walls, and the door in one particular room will not stop opening. What works about the house on Pine Street is that it does an excellent job of capturing the claustrophobic sense of loneliness Jennifer has, as played by Emily Goss. She's carrying this baby, and so her paranoid and not particularly understanding husband is always on her case, while her mother, Meredith, one of the most significant characters in the film, played by Kath Barnett, is horribly overbearing. She's controlling and sarcastic and cruel to her daughter. They don't have a very good relationship, put it this way. And so you get the sense that both the mum and the husband are just more bothered about the baby Jennifer's carrying than Jennifer herself. Whether this is an accurate portrayal of what these people are actually like, or if the film is giving us a Jennifer's eye, a skewed Jennifer view of the world, it's hard to tell. But if it's the latter, I think the film does a brilliant job of exploring the paranoia and pressure of having a baby, especially if you're struggling with mental health. I mean, think about it. A woman gets pregnant and she's carrying around this treasure, as it were, but there are others invested in this treasure, others who feel like they have joint ownership of it, particularly the husband, of course. It's a bizarre idea that something could be part of your body and yet can be co-claimed by someone else. Imagine someone said that they co-owned your leg or your arm. The film, I think, therefore, has some inevitable connection with Roman Polanski's excellent Rosemary's Baby. That also featured characters gathering around a woman being nice and pleasant, as if they cared about Rosemary, but actually all they really cared about was Adrienne, the son of Satan, growing in her womb. However, don't let the link with Rosemary's Baby put you off. The House of Pine Street is not a rip-off of Rosemary's Baby. It doesn't go down that sort of route at all, despite what some reviewers might say. It's just that sense of paranoia and pregnancy is really well captured. In fact, it's so well captured that some viewers may even struggle with the film because almost every character in this is unlikable. The husband is just a waste of space and he lacks any sort of understanding or patience with his wife. The mother, she's amazingly annoying. She feels disingenuous, self-obsessed. She's plain nasty at times. And even when Jennifer seeks outside help, it's presented to her not in a caring or nurturing way. The helpers that she encounters are weird or flawed, and ultimately they're no help at all. You watch this film really wishing that someone nice would come along out of the woodwork and help this poor Jennifer out. But then, if this is her subtle sense of paranoia being seen by the viewer, this skewed view, the implication is there's going to be nobody out there, everyone's potentially an enemy. So this little study of paranoia and certain types of mental illness is really well put together, I think, in the film. Particularly Emily Goss's performance, who's both brittle and brave and traumatized for the whole film. One moment in particular, she sits at a housewarming party that's been forced on her by her mum, and we get a shot of Jennifer sitting there forcing a smile, but desperate for it all to end, because she's actually getting more and more scared in this house. There are things happening that might not just be in her brain, but actually might be in the house. I think all that stuff works very well. What is going on in the house? The supernatural stuff isn't fully clear, and I liked how the filmmakers, brothers I think, Aaron and Austin Kelling, seem quite willing to spend time in the vagueness of not knowing what's really going on. So it adds to the loneliness and the pressure. The film takes its time as well. Some might argue it even takes at close to 2 hours too long. But it explores some interesting theories about ghosts and their power. And thematically speaking, it doesn't go down the classic haunted house route, which I quite appreciated. But what about the scares? Is this a house you'd be actually terrified to sleep in? Well, according to many critics, you really would be. The House on Pine Street has had some stellar reviews, with some critics saying it left them physically shaking. Others that it was a horror film that affected them like no other. This is high praise, and I'm always pleased to hear when audiences are given a legit scare ride in a film. And I would never suggest that these guys are wrong. They got scared, good for them. Speaking personally, I didn't really quite see what was so scary about the film. It's got its moments and there's nice beats of tension and creepiness, but I didn't think it was particularly frightening. I suppose what may be more the case is that it's a bit more on the disturbing side. It's a sort of different flavor of fear. Viewers watching this have said that this film has gotten under their skin, and I think the ominous, isolated feeling of this family drama, coupled with the ghostly plot, which might be a metaphor for it all, I think that's what might cause people to remember this. But super scary? Well, I didn't quite get that myself, but lots of people do. I also tend to disagree with some people about the glowing reviews of the film, who have even, some have said that they put it on a par with films like It Follows or The Babadook. For example, the acting, it isn't bad by any stretch, and the lead, Emily Goss, carries a lot of drama on her shoulders in this, and she does a good job. She won Best Actress at the Blue Whiskey Independent Film Awards for what she did with this role. And another actor I thought came across naturally was Jim Jarinc, I think he's called, as Walter. He's a veteran of over 24 films and 120 stage productions, and you can tell he's a strong asset. But there's something I couldn't quite put my finger on, that there were times when I watched interactions between particularly Jennifer and her husband, for example, that I felt like, you know when you feel like you're watching people in front of a camera reading lines? The mother, played by Kathy Barnett, is actually very good and is the overpowering mother in this. But there were even moments in scenes with her, maybe because, I don't know why, but there was a sense of distance and I couldn't figure out what was taking me out of the reality of those scenes. Maybe it's just me. Again, that's not to say that they are bad as such, but when I read people comparing the acting of the film to the same levels as The Babadook particularly, I struggle to make that comparison. I think the acting in The Babadook was quite phenomenal. Now, there's clearly some people out there, though, that are getting thoroughly creeped out by this, and what it really captures well, like I said, is that pretty horrible sense that a pregnant woman is owned by other people. The filmmakers make a special point of this by regularly showing other people going up to Jessica and touching her bum, just like that. It's an action you would never dream of doing to somebody normally. You would just go to work and walk up to some woman who wasn't pregnant and then like slap a hand on her belly and say hi. But there's something about a pregnant woman that is almost like it's a sign to society that it's a free-for-all to touch her. I've known pregnant women who've said exactly this, that this definitely happens, and suddenly your body is not your own anymore, that you aren't just sharing it with another human being inside you, but something weird happens, you start to share it with the world outside you, that suddenly other people are fussing over you and your body and how you use and what you, they want to be involved in how you use your body. The world assumes also that you're going to be over the moon with this miracle you have growing inside you, but in actual fact, you may view that pregnancy with a growing sense of panic or despair or even resentment. You realize that your life isn't just being taken over in pregnancy, but your independence that's going in pregnancy isn't exactly going to come back once the baby's out. Then you have a child and you're supposed to look after that child, and parents who are brave enough to be honest about this might admit about how having a child is great, of course it is, but it's also an incredible challenge because in some senses you kind of lose yourself or you lose your independence and you have to find a new I'm a parent now version of yourself. The Babadook explored this in great depth, but in terms of theme and intensity, I think The House on Pine Street treads in very similar areas, and it does this by creeping out and disturbing quite a lot of viewers out there. And so I suggest you maybe give it a try, see if you start to shake. I didn't shake a lot, but I certainly found the film interesting. Well, that's it. We've come to the end of this little wander through some of the recent haunted house movies in Horrorland, and rest assured there's going to be more on the way because movies have a tendency to keep on building creepy homes. We have this twisted fascination with not only telling each other scary stories, but trying to tell tales that invade that place which is supposed to be our haven in the world. Our homes, our base, our mothership, our escape. Horror films, like the three we've looked at in this series, horror films come along and they say, don't bother relaxing, because nowhere is safe. Not even the place where you sleep every night. So until next time, don't forget to share and subscribe. Follow me on Twitter at RevPeterLaws or on Facebook at The Flicks The Church For God, or read my column, my horror column in the 14 Times magazine. Sleep well in your house tonight. And don't forget The Flicks The Church For God. Thinking about it, that's an incredibly depressing theme and episode, but hey, that's horror.